obviously the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex there. It's very easy to reposition that. I'll talk about the screens that you're seeing here in just a moment. First of all, everybody hear me okay? Everybody see the screen okay? You should see the Fort Worth area. No issues? Anybody give a thumbs up? We're good? Perfect. Thank you so much. So really, I just want to point out a couple quick things based on your permissions. When somebody lands here, oftentimes this is a supervisor, but it can be users of the platform. We present to them a dashboard. The dashboard is basically what's going on right now, where our current units are, sort of what the call handling is. And we have a map component that exists here. And the map is very important for you, because we're working with a solution that is browser-based and we have the ability to have multiple tabs or multiple windows open, we could really expand out. And if we so desired, we could literally see all of Texas. And if for instance, Yellowstone or Yosemite decided to suddenly blow up half of Texas with some large anomaly, it would be possible for you to handle all 911 calls for the entire state, but also be able to see all of the units that would be logged on to the Rapid Deploy mobile app. And we'll talk specifically about what that means in just a second. But for instance, we have two units that happen to be up here in the Richardson area. We can see outside of the boundaries of the GIS data that a single agency or a single county is feeding to the platform. And the power of that situational awareness, that operational awareness, has really been sort of the attractive component to the Nimbus CAD platform as a DR, or potentially as a planned or unplanned emergency solution. The ability to maintain your Windows Mobile PCs, the MDCs, to their legacy CAD platforms that are in place and augment that with our mobile app is something that's also very important. So now we have the ability, you'll see here's our mobile application. I have the ability to create a new event. I have the ability to look at closed and active incidents, but augment that with the ability to launch this into a DR, or as we talked about, a planned or unplanned event management tool. And so we have several customers that are using this for these very instances. One business process that we had in a workflow that was utilized in the city of Minneapolis, specifically, they purchased this to be able to have that DR solution for COVID planning and the ability to really balance out the number of call takers and dispatchers that would be available in the Minneapolis Metroplex as they were really, really strained for resources. And obviously with the civil unrest that took place, they sort of transitioned that to being able to handle some of those major events and the augmentation of staff and responders out in the field. So being able to easily access that data through this map. And one of the other things that's really important is along with this, now this can become a map that shows whether it be static information or real-time data and information such as our real-time traffic map, being able to see that information as well as any Waze information on our map display. And as we zoom in, zoom out, the system's going to be responsive to that data that we've selected. So we can see real-time traffic. We can see our Waze alerts, augment that onto the CAD map. And then also, if you want, we really take and leverage both custom. So if we have a Texas custom base map that you'll see down here in the bottom, or we have the ability to leverage existing publicly available data sets. So specifically, if we wanted to have our street map display, our Esri navigation display, and we can change up those underlying base maps that are being seen and utilized, but also have the ability, if we want, we can bring in things like imagery and so on, and then augment that with any type of rain, snow, precipitation. I know you guys just had some interesting snowstorms down there in the region, but being able to see that on the map display, so we have that capability. What's most important, though, is being able to take and have multiple data sets coming from agencies that are in the region and being able to share that in one holistic view. So specifically, if we wanted to do something simple, maybe show all of our police stations and fire stations throughout the region, I can select those. We'll update our map with that information. And so now we can see where all of our police locations are. I could click on one of those dots and get the underlying details. We also have the ability to bring in other things. So specifically, not in the DFW complex, but down in the Houston region, we actually have access to real-time cameras that are accessible there. And what we'll see, if we zoom out just a bit, there's a few just down in the corridor above Houston. Sorry, I zoomed just a bit too much there. But if we want, we can actually see the underlying image data And if we had real-time traffic information and the ability to link to their traffic camera image, we could go out to TxDOT, hit Texas DOT, and we can actually view what that image looks like out there. Now, of course, we don't have access to that. It's a closed environment, but we do see that that URL is accessible. We're basically locked down in a demo environment. We can't get to their data. The other thing that's also important is if there are, if we're going to utilize this as a DR CAD solution, because we're leveraging Esri data sets specifically for the Fort Worth area, and I'm just going to zoom back to home here. We do have the ability, because of the CAD platform that they're using right now, they actually expose their active call list, and we can see these on a map display. And I'm actually going to take away all of the fire locations and police locations, but you can see they have an active event down here, and this is coming from their legacy CAD system. It's being broadcast out, so we can consume in that live real-time data and still see that visually on our map display here that you're going to be utilizing as a DR solution, or obviously a planned or unplanned event solution that would be out there. Map is really important to the platform. You can see there's some other examples of data sets that we use just here in the DC region where we base our demonstrations mostly. So these could be things like AED devices. You know, they could be some of the static things like fire alarm districts and battalion areas, but also things like real-time hospital status that could be accessible. And you could obviously see who's going to be on divert, who's operating in a live operational environment, and so on. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to walk you through the call handling within our platform and sort of show you how that works and how that operates. What will also be most important when we look at that call taking form is most often your agencies are also going to be utilizing our Radius map. And as kind of indicated earlier on, Radius is really the front end of our CAD platform, but it is a 911 mapping solution that can tag along and be part of your current legacy environment without using the entire Nimbus CAD platform. So we're going to simulate a call coming in, and this would be a call taker position. The Nimbus map that you see, I'm sorry, the Radius map that you see here on the right, this is obviously going to be that call handling map to support your current environment. And then coupled with that, we have the ability to handle our call processing and call taker form here behind the scenes. So let me just move over here to my other screen. I'm going to walk through just simulating a 911 call coming in, as you would imagine. Let me move some windows around here as it's covering up my simulator. And we're going to go ahead and push in a 911 call. So a few things are going to take place. First of all, as we continue to get call location updates for that incident, you'll see if I hover over that particular call and all of the previous updates. So these were all the phase one and, of course, the initial wireless call. And then here's our phase two call that came in. I can click on that and see the underlying details. Along with it, behind the scenes, you'll see that we're also taking and we are geo-validating that information. And just so you know, we're actually connecting directly to your Esri geocoder for the county. So we can leverage the counties or the cities, and we can build a hierarchy in those to go ahead and utilize that for location validation from the lat long that we're receiving from the call. What I'm doing here is obviously processing that further than into the Nimbus CAD platform. So as I do that, it's going to pull that information pop, that Annie Alley data. It's going to provide all our location updates, the computed and calculated nearest closest valid street address against your Esri geocoder, then into the location information, and I can continue following through creating the event. Just to kind of show you what the Radius application also provides. So if I'm solely using this with your legacy CAD, you'll see that we're displaying the caller information, that address information, and I can click on that. It copies it to my clipboard. I then have the ability, if we want, I can go ahead and plop that directly into my legacy CAD and utilize that address for call creation in my legacy CAD system. Along with this, we also have a lot of capabilities here within our own platform that are over and above the features that you may have in your current systems. So we calculate based on that location, the what three words location of that incident. If you're not familiar with what three words basically divided up the entire globe into squares of 3 meter by 3 meter locations. They assign three unique words with that location. And basically what they're doing is they're utilizing that as another location service to determine where a caller's emergency may be. Some people are using these in rural areas, but they're also being used in business parks as a reference point if you're in a large sort of complex area. These help as sort of those waypoints and markers to be able to locate a caller if you're getting bad wireless or phase one data and you can't get a good ping on their location. We display the lat long that was received with the Annie Alley, and we also calculate that into degrees, minutes, seconds. Once again, I do have the ability to click on that, save it to the clipboard if we needed to send that over to say aviation, if they're going to bring a medevac in and they're looking for landing zones, or if we started a search grid for maybe a lost person. And then along with this, we also have the ability to do some key features and functions that we have accessible within our own platform. So we have three key components. These are referred to as our two-way SMS chat, but also our rapid video and rapid locate components. So in this case, if we happen to have an open line, and that's basically the scenario I'm going to tee up here for you, I'm going to bring my phone over here onto the screen. And if I wanted to, I could send out a message through our application. This is over and above text to 911. So this is in addition to that. But being able to say, this is 911, we cannot hear you. Do you have an emergency? And what you're seeing, obviously, is on the left-hand side, I'm receiving that text message out here in the field on my SMS through my phone. Now, what I'm going to show you real quick, I'm just going to open up my clipboard, and I'm going to paste in a foreign language being typed in by our caller. And obviously, this is something that you may have that may occur from time to time. But I'm going to go ahead and grab a different language set from my stored items here. I'm going to show you what that looks like. So I just grabbed it from my notepad. We're going to bring you back over here onto the screen. And I'm going to paste in what I selected from my notepad. So we're basically going to say in German back to our dispatcher and call taker, I may have an emergency here, but I'm sorry, I don't speak English. So the Radius application, whether it be solely for the call handling and mapping and the tools that it provides, or if it's the front end, obviously, for the CAD platform, now we have the ability to have a real-time language translation tool here. And this is immediately recognizing that our caller has responded in German. It allows the call taker to respond in English. Not a problem. We have a great tool to help you. And you'll see that now, since we've recommended that German is that language, we're going to continue our conversations and pick up without a lot of delay that continued communication and getting help to our caller that's out here in the field. And the real advantage here is, you know, we have maybe some common languages, German, Spanish, and so on, but there's roughly over 70 languages that are in here. We use a large set that's available through Microsoft. And that language translation can really get into some of the very unique languages that maybe you don't encounter on a regular basis. German, Spanish, maybe Arabic, maybe something that you encounter quite often. But there may be others like Portuguese or something that you don't encounter very often. You can use Language Line. You can determine what they're speaking and now accelerate that communication with your caller. Some of the other things that we can also do is if we're having trouble locating our caller, we can activate a function within the platform called Rapid Locate. Rapid Locate is going to allow us to send a request out to our caller. So we can send that off, and we're going to see that I now have the ability to select that link as a caller. And what that's going to do is authorize me to say, yes, I'd love to go ahead and share my location with the 911 center. And as I do that, you're going to see that that gets immediately shared. And what's going to take place behind the scenes is it's going to show that I am some distance away from where my actual incident is. So if I hover over my line, I'm way up in Baltimore. I'm roughly 1,300 miles from y'all down there. But you can see where that call location came in from. And if I click on that, I actually have the ability to accept that location as our new call location.
Jamie, if I can cut in for a sec just on this, and everybody, I know we're going quite quickly here. We have a limited amount of time, so we're trying to pack a lot in. So please bear with us from that point of view. If there's anything you want to double click on and get Jamie to go a bit further on, that's that it would be really great if we could get some feedback. Just some things I want to highlight is something Jamie touched on was our deep integration with Esri. So all your mapping is immediately available to us because you leverage Esri with you in your environment. So there's none of this provisioning, which takes years and years to get right. We can literally come in and switch on and consume your center lines, your jurisdiction boundaries, all that kind of thing. Also, we have a direct integration straight into Apple and Google. So in the event of a 911 outage, we actually get the location updates from mobile phones via push message, right? So we get notified before even sometimes the phone rings in one of your peace apps. So in the unlikely event that you have a total district-wide 911 outage, anyone leveraging this platform would still see all the calls that had popped, regardless of whether your 911 networking was working or not, because we have that direct pipe straight into Apple and Google. So just to bear that in mind, in terms of like resiliency and the other ways we've solved some unique challenges with mobile location, and Jamie obviously showed you how interacting with a citizen's handset, whether it's text or he can also onboard their live video. So we can do a number of things which are kind of, let's say, next generation capabilities. I'll pause there and see if there's any questions maybe from the floor before we keep going on the demo. No questions?
Thanks, okay. Steve.
All right.
One question I wanted to ask and pose to the group right now, as I'm sure with some of your legacy CAD vendors, and Steve, you brought it up, I think it's an important point. That Esri data that you host out there, that's available as a consumable Esri REST service that can be secured or unsecured depending on how you've deployed it. So if you have critical infrastructure, we can connect to that. And the moment that your GIS services, whether that be within the 911 center, if it happens to be part of the county or the city, they make an update to the data and the information in that service, it'll immediately be reflected inside of Radius, but also the Nimbus CAD platform. I think that's pretty important as you think about it from an administrative standpoint. You're not having to worry about time and again that CAD map role or that mapping role for your 911 system that you may currently be experiencing. So, Steve, I'm glad you brought that up. It's a very good point. What I'm going to do is go ahead and process this call through so you guys can just see basically what it looks like. So basically in this scenario here, we're just going to say that we have a suspicious person at the current location. Obviously, I could have toggled through these with my keyboard. If I'm more of a keyboard person, I'm sort of a mouse person. But this gives us the ability, if we want, we can go ahead and send that event off. It's basically closing the call handling. We're hanging up with our 911 caller. There's a suspicious person. We may get some remarks or notes. We're going to go ahead and send that off. Now dispatch can go ahead and pick that up. We'll show you that in a moment. We do have the ability within the platform to tag team this event. So if we're in a call taker, dispatcher, dedicated type of scenario, call takers can continue interrogating our caller, trying to get more information. If this happens to be that hot or emergency call, send that off for dispatch into the pending queue. And obviously dispatch can accelerate getting those units to respond. And conversely, if it happens to be one of those types of situations where maybe we're tracking storm damage or something, it may be an advise only event. We take the 911 call. We're not going to physically respond as a PSAP, but we want to log that maybe there's wires down or maybe there's flooding in a particular area, but no loss or potential loss of life that could be in play. We just want to make some information on that. We can go ahead and use the advise only event to create that. What I'm going to do is go ahead and send this off to dispatch. Obviously, my call taker form and my map are going to go back to the ready position. And then, of course, we're going to allow creating this event and accessing this incident to go ahead and create our response for this. So from that point, now we have the ability. And if I happen to be at a dispatch position, I'm going to pull up my dispatch page. And we'll just show you what it looks like to be able to assign those units out in the field.
From NPR. House Democrats are moving ahead with impeachment proceedings against President Trump, arguing that he incited his supporters to violently attack the U.S. Capitol. Do you want to hear more about
Did anybody have a question? Just want to pause for a sec. I heard some audio there in the background. Okay. We'll just go ahead and continue forward. I'll just show you kind of what this looks like at a peripheral view. One thing that's most important is we do have the ability to integrate with ProQA. So if you're utilizing ProQA in a disaster recovery mode, you would have the ability to access that. May require some configuration to move from your production environment, obviously over to a disaster recovery CAD, but you do have the ability to handle and manage that. We can clone this event. So basically, that's the manual creation of a secondary response. This was obviously a police event, but if this turns into an assault call and maybe we need medical services, we can create that right from here. What I'm actually going to do is go through my assignment of units, and specifically, I'm going to utilize myself. You'll see that we actually filtered these by agency and by your location, but this is actually now going to send over to my mobile. And what I'm going to show you here is that mobile client receiving that incident dispatch. And you'll see that what I'm going to do is I'm going to get a push notification. What's most important here is this is an application that can be deployed on an iOS device or an Android device. This can be in addition to a mobile PC or MDC, as I indicated earlier, that may stay connected to their legacy CAD platform. But in the event that we have a planned or unplanned event, we can quickly augment our resources out in the field. We can hand out the access to the iOS or the Android application, depending on the platform that they have. If I'm not logged on, I'll still get this push message or an SMS notification that I've been dispatched to the event. And from here, as a responder in the field, this gives me the ability. I could go ahead and start navigation from here. You'll see that this is going to go ahead and pop over to my preferred mapping tool. I use Google on this device, so we can go ahead and see my route. I have the ability, if we want, I can go ahead and update my response status. So I can change from in route or from assigned to in route. And that'll update back to our CAD platform. And then I also have the ability, if we want, we can incorporate with this. We have Siri shortcuts that the user can train their device to utilize. So this allows the ability to create events from the field. So we can do what's called a self-dispatch, or we have the ability to go ahead and update our incident status. And so for me, hey Siri, 1023. And I can go ahead and put myself on scene for an incident. And I can do that all via my voice, and then I'll get a confirmation of it. You'll see I'm changing to on scene back here on the CAD side of things. So if we want, and we're not dealing with emergent situations, maybe this isn't best practice if, you know, we're responding to shots fired. Most likely I'm screaming over the radio or yelling over the radio, dispatch, I'm out. I may just pull up and jump out of the car, not necessarily communicate. But in a normal flow, if you're dealing with, you know, planned events, a farmer's market, you know, if you're dealing with state fair, county fair, those types of things, we have that voice interaction and that voice automation that we can incorporate into the platform. What's also nice is at any point in time, the end user can see an entire timeline of the events for this incident. They can always see the key details. If they want, they can actually add what we call forms to this particular call. So maybe it's a contact form, it's suspect info, that type of thing. And then we can also, if we want, we can use those same technologies to add notes and remarks to the event. So this is a new note for the event. And you'll see that me just voicing that information, you'll see that it grabbed what I started to say and applied that note and added it to the CAD incident for everybody else to be able to see. And then we can also access our camera. If we need to scan a barcode, we can do that. I'm going to go ahead and grab my camera roll here. We'll grab this guy, happens to be me. And I can go ahead and attach that person to the incident. And we can also attach things like the suspect vehicle. You know, maybe it's a picture of the actual incident. And you'll see that that image becomes part of that incident timeline. So the idea here being, obviously, we have a very easy to deploy solution. It's browser based. There's not a client to install. We don't have to worry about ActiveX controls and Java applets and things like that. This system is always at the ready. We always have the ability to quickly log into it. We can expand out the use for our responders if that happens to be, you know, county or local resources that have already been pre-configured and defined, or if we have to augment with that with maybe state or federal resources, we can easily give access to the mobile app and we can see exactly where those folks are out in the field and have the ability really to manage that call handling within the Nimbus CAD platform.
Yeah, Jamie, if I can jump in here, I'm conscious of running out of time. I just want to kind of talk from a strategic point of view. You know, being a browser-based CAD, as Jamie mentioned, you know, we're in Microsoft Azure Gov. Just from a security point of view and from a CGIS point of view, but also more importantly, kind of how to operationalize a solution like this. And we've obviously have some learnings with two statewide deployments of this kind of DR solution. Something that the elephant in the room is kind of like pricing, because this is a SaaS-based solution, right? We subscription, the kind of current user base. This is a fraction of what a CAD would cost to have as a DR solution. We price it. Would we even think about the notion of a DR CAD? We think about the maximum usage, which would be 3 weeks of a year. So we take what a subscription would cost for our solution, which, by the way, is typically, you know, apples to apples for a CAD of for a one agency for, you know, full-time usage, we're about half the price of a typical CAD. For our platform across a district to be a DR CAD, we literally divide that price by 52 for number of weeks a year and multiply it by 3. So just give you like an order of magnitude. So like 50 seats and 500 vehicles for DR CAD would be about $80,000 a year. So it's just, you know, I know when you think CAD, you go, oh my gosh, millions of dollars a year, years of deployment. It just, we're kind of breaking that whole mold on its head. And so just want to be mindful. I'm sure we haven't exactly sized your agency down to a T, but just give you an idea of what's possible, and price and technology should not be the blocker, right? Are there any questions?
No questions.
Okay. I'm conscious of our time. I don't know how we've done. I haven't run the clock. But Shanar, is there anything else you'd like us to show?
No, I think you did a pretty good job. As I said in the introduction, we're introducing the board to some other concepts that we would want to entertain in the future, with our goal to potentially consolidate some of our smaller PSAPs into one, the ability to have a CAD that would be much cheaper than the average CAD that's out there, I think is an appealing product. I also like the fact that, I mean, we are headed to an I3 internet-based world, and so getting familiar with the solutions that are out there is what I want to introduce my board to, so that when we start to sit down and take some serious notes, we're familiar with or have an idea of what the offerings are to know which direction to go. So, Steve, you and I have been on this journey for a couple of years since you've landed in the U.S. per se. So I've always appreciated this product, and I appreciate the things that you guys have done since, what, 3 years ago, 3.5
years ago? Yes, ma'am. June 17, San Antonio was our touchdown.
So I appreciate you guys hopping on and sharing what you have with the board, and we will reach out to you guys later on.
Okay.
If any of the board members have any questions.
I do have two questions. First one is, how long have you been with NCT COG?
So our first contract with NCT COG was for analytics, and they contracted that in October 2018. And we've just won a competitive RFP to replace their entire mapping solution as well, which was Geocom, and that's currently cutting over. And just also, it's a good indicator. Last week, we were cutting over 6 PSAPs a day. So, you know, the whole concept of like each one is a 9-month transformation project. 6 PSAPs today were going live on our solution for mapping last week at NCT.
And do you have any type of hub designation?
I'm not familiar with hub. Could you clarify? Sorry, sir, I don't know the term.
You answer my question.
Okay. Okay. I'll do some research to come back on that one.
Anything else there, Shinar?
No, sir.
Okay. Well, thank y'all for your time. Very good information.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. And I'll put something in the chat as well for you. That's the AT&T link about us. And,
okay.
All right. Have a good day. Bye, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Now we'll move to item 7, purchasing policy update.
So we handed you guys the updated purchasing policy, which literally was just changing the verbiage of the roles that were created with the reorganization since I've been here, the getting rid of the paper process and using QuickBase. So we had given you guys an updated policy to review for approval. So I'm looking for comments for changes, and if there are none, then for approval of the policy.
Any comments? Okay, Shinar, I have two. The first one is, I know the policy says QuickBase. Is there any way that we could change that to a vendor neutral description so that if down the line the board or the district decided to go to something other than QuickBase, we wouldn't have to come back and update the policy?
I can do that.
Okay. And the second thing is, since it does reference the district's hub policy, and we have quite a few new board members, could you just share the hub policy with us at some point in time?
Okay.
Do we have a motion?
Rick, do you need a motion with the amendment that you wanted at the beginning?
Yes, please.
I'll make a motion with the amendment that Rick Brunson had made for approval.
Have a second.
I'll second.
Any more discussion? All in favor, raise your hand, thumbs up. Motion passes unanimously. Next item 8, records management policy, introduction for review.
Correct. So we've included the records management policy that we had one that was very outdated, and we weren't actually in compliance because we weren't aware of it. And once we started to get rid of old documentations, we looked into the current records management information and found out that they actually have a canned policy that you can make relative to your agency. So that's essentially what we did. Instead of reinventing the wheel, we just took the policy that they chose as an example, and we made it Tarrant County specific. So we're asking the board if you guys can look over that for the next meeting approval.
So are you looking for action today?
No, I want to give the board a chance to review it.
Okay, does anybody have any questions before we move to the next item?
Shinar, this provides for the executive assistant to be the record management officer. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay,
then we'll move to number 9, the CARES Act / FFCRA RN 2112.
So as I reached out to you guys a couple weeks ago to see what each city and county was doing in regards to the CARES Act and the FFCRA provision, and having received feedback and also receiving the funds from the CARES Act that we did, I'm asking the board to afford one of these, the following two opportunities or leeway as far as this act goes, and that's either one, implement the CARES Act the same way as Tarrant County is doing for a span of 6 months as it was written, or two, continue the one-time provision for 80 hours of paid sick leave. And go to page 20 and 21, you will see the cost. If, in fact, every employee of the district had to take advantage of the 80 hours and or the 80 hours plus the provision for the 10 weeks for son and daughter care, that would be the cost to the district, and it would be derived or taken from the monies that we received from the county and Fort Worth that we were allocated for the CARES Act funding for this last year.
Shinar, my only concern, trying to get a handle on this, my understanding is the CARES Act funding was required to be used by December 1st, and that's not been extended yet. So I'm not clear on the reference to monies being allocated from CARES Act funding for the policy that's going to apply in the future.
So the district received that funding? And would be allocating it back into the appropriate columns for salary and health benefits so that the monies are there. So my understanding or my, I mean, that's what I need to know is I can we use that money to continue the CARES Act or the provision that we make here at the board? Because it's not truly the act, because that act is gone. But what Tarrant County did was basically carbon copy it and make it their own, but it holds the exact same provisions as the CARES Act. So they're not calling it the CARES Act, but they're holding the exact provisions of the act.
But the county's not using CARES Act funding for that, are they?
No.
No, there wouldn't be. Again, my understanding is all the CARES Act funding that was obtained by any entity was required to be utilized for expenses incurred through December 31st. Since that was not extended, then what we've got, we can, this policy is fine. I mean, it's not a bad policy, but the funding source is the only issue that I'm raising.
Okay, so would this change it back to the general fund, the 5120 in general, if it were to be passed?
Because there was no requirement for us with that money that was given through Tarrant County for us to have to use that by the 31st, correct? I understand, Wayne, what you're saying. If it was CARES funding, but the money that was given to us, there was not a deadline or stipulation on that, correct?
Yes.
There was through Fort Worth?
Yes.
So then what was the fine line print on if we did not use it? Did we have to return that fund, those funds? Any unused portion of it?
That's my assumption, yes. The funds were allocated by the federal government and through Tarrant County, who was the agency for the government, under the proviso that they be used for expenditures incurred by the agency through December 31st of this past year.
So essentially, okay. Your reimbursement then of what we've already paid out last year for right. COVID-related things.
Yes.
And that was my understanding, too, is that the Fort Worth was reimbursing Tarrant County 911 for expenditures that were above normal operating things related to. So that shouldn't have to be repaid. It should already. It should be done.
Should be a reimbursement.
Right.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Expenses were already incurred in order to qualify for them. That's correct.
Okay. So I guess the real question then is just, what are we going to do since the provisions for the leave were not extended? Did we ever find out, Shinar, if we became eligible for reimbursement under the extension of the tax credits? I'm sorry, the tax credit for expenditures through, I think it was March 31st of this year?
My understanding is that is only for private businesses, but I could be wrong.
Okay. Wayne, do you have any insight on that at all?
I don't. There are some public agencies. I'm hearing your question to be the additional funding that was just approved. There are some government agencies that will qualify for that. That's the bottom line question. Whether or not Tarrant County 911 fits in that. I don't have an answer.
So really the real question is, what do we do to continue support of those impacted by COVID from a budgetary standpoint, whether we do or do not qualify for any tax credit? Is that
effectively, this is a business decision. We're dealing with two different issues here. The federal government mandated additional leave provisions in 2020 when COVID first hit, even before CARES Act funding was approved. That was mandated on all governmental entities, essentially. So we knew we had to provide an extension of sick leave and family medical leave. Whether or not we were going to get reimbursed for it was the unknown in question. We did get some reimbursements for that, thankfully. Now the question is a business decision. Since that law has now expired, you're not mandated to do that anymore for your employees. But the question is that a proper thing for you to be considering? Because we're still obviously dealing with these issues. And do you want to provide a policy that's going to assist the employees in the event that they are subject to having to take leave that's not within the normal employment policy leave allowed?
And Shannara, one clarification. This request is for the remaining hours that are available in that initial 80-hour bucket. Is that correct?
Yeah.
We're not starting the clock over again.
No.
Okay.
I think the interpretation that Forworth's going with is if you used your 80 hours, then great. If you did not use your 80 hours and you had time left, that time expired December 31st, and that time is not available to continue on into 2021 post the 31st. I think they're waiting to see what happens with the change of administration and whether or not those hours are reauthorized. But in the interim, they're expecting people to use their sick leave, use their vacation, ask for extended time if they need it for a family member, which they're doing everything they can do to accommodate it, such as working from home and stuff like that. But they are not letting the hours continue at this point.
The typical approach in the public or private sector. It's similar to what we're doing at AT&T.
So if we don't make an internal business decision, you're saying that the decision, whatever we make, will come out of the health benefits line item for the budget. And so then I guess the counter question is, what happens then if that employee has exhausted their 80 hours and still requires leave and does not have adequate leave balances on file to cover that time? Is that then covered in the policy where it's a no pay type situation?
That would be, yeah, that would be the assumption, yes.
Okay.
Shannara, do you guys have any type of leave donation program for catastrophic stuff?
Not at this time, no.
Was there a general response that you got back in terms of the cities that were polled and kind of what they're doing? You know, oftentimes we compare the business decisions of Tarrant County with those of the participating cities. So did you get kind of a general consensus, or was it kind of all over the board?
it was a little varied. Fort Worth and Arlington are in the same boat. Tarrant County, the county's in a different, made a different decision. Chief Spivey advised that Irving is going, the 80 hours are still available to use route. I've talked to some of the districts and they're kind of split. More going with, if you had 80, you can keep those 80, but that was it. So, you know, I have to weigh on my staff here. We have a small amount of staff, but a large amount of our staff have either children or spouses that work in school systems and daycare systems. And so, you know, whenever the school system closes, we've got, you know, kids that are home and, they need, you know, the parents to be there. So we've been fortunate enough that we've adapted very well to the work from home scenario. But we also have to keep in mind that kids are bringing home, you know, the virus, and parents are getting sick. So at that point, the parent is unable to work from home and having to use their own leave. So there's a lot in the mix. And I can say, you know, we've managed very well with the work from home that has allowed employees to not have to use leave, even when the benefit was there. But I would like to have a safety net there, so that folks are not coming into work when they're sick just because they've run out of leave and they don't want to be leave without pay.
Would you say that the good majority of the staff has not utilized that 80-hour benefit?
That's correct.
Because of the work, okay. When do you need an answer on this? Now?
I mean, we can wait. We can wait till next month, but then that gives me a whole another month of trying to balance the needs of my folks. That right now I have folks at home who are trying to get healthy, or a family member healthy. So.
Shinar, do you have rapid testing available for your folks as well?
No, sir. That's one of the hardest things that we've been able to find.
Reach out to me afterwards and let me see if I can figure out how to help you with that, because that might at least help families and staff of yours to figure out if there's a suspected problem versus a true problem. I might be able to help you with that here from Fort Worth.
I appreciate that.
So do we have a motion to move forward with a vote this month?
I personally would like more time to review it and table it. That's my request. Because I think we're so split, and in the city of Grand Prairie, I know, like I've shared with you, we're honoring that 80 hours too, and it, you know, we may or may not get reimbursed or get the tax credit. Let me be clear, have any kind of benefit for the city, but we're extending that for our employee base. So
is that a motion?
I'll make a motion that we postpone this until next month.
And we second.
Aye.
All in favor of postponing this until next month, raise your hand. Thumb. All opposed? Motion carries.
So, hey, Rick, okay, it's Jim. What would we want Shinar to bring back next month to help us get this off the table? Do we want a history of how much time it's been used? What do you guys think? Because I really, personally, I could lean either way on this, but I want to make sure her people are taken care of, too.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to say, you had mentioned that most of your staff has not utilized it. I just want to know what the impact will be, and maybe I'm looking at that right in front of my face and missing it. What would the impact be? What would suffer if we continue? Is there a negative side to continuing that 80 hours? And then past that 80 hours, you would use your regular balances. What would be impacted if we continue to do that? On the financial side, anyway.
What did you say in the last part?
I was asking, what would be impact if we choose to offer the 80 hours? I'm sorry, there's a lot of feedback. If we choose to offer the 80 hours, and we're pulling it out of the health benefits line item of the budget, is there anything that would suffer or be negatively impacted by that?
I guess, Rick, this is Jim. I'd also ask council to make sure that we're legally able to extend it since the 31st. It sounds like different agencies have interpreted it differently. So whatever we're legally able to do, I would, err on the side of trying to support our staff.
Well, the legal side is employer choice. That's the act is very clear with that. If someone wishes to extend it, it is completely employer choice. And if, in fact, they are eligible for the payroll tax credits. It would cover up until, I believe it's March 1st or the end of March, whatever the case may be. So the legal side, we definitely have that ability, which is what Tarrant County has done, only they have extended to June the entire provision of the act.
And with your hands shaking up and down, Wayne, I'm taking that as you agree.
I agree with that, absolutely. And, you know, it may be between now and your next meeting that the new regime will provide an extension of the Family First Act and mandate this on everybody. But right now, it's not mandated. And right now, the funding has run out for those types of issues. So it's just a business decision whether or not the district wants to try to cover its employees in a situation that has not lessened. I mean, we are obviously just as susceptible to those issues in the coming year as we were the past year. But you're not mandated to adopt this policy. It's probably a wise thing to consider how you're going to treat your employees if they are affected by COVID. But unfortunately, right now, there is not funding from the federal government to help you do that. It's truly no different than when this first came out. You were mandated to provide the leave out of your own pocket for these employees when the Family First Act was first adopted. And it was only later that the CARES Act came in and started providing funding to cover some of those costs. So we're kind of in the same situation right now.
Rather than waiting a month, could we have a special session if we took a week or so to review or get more information so we're not waiting so long? Because I imagine, to Wayne's point about this being an ongoing issue, I'm assuming that right now, if somebody's out, a Tarrant County staff is out, that is being deducted from what their normal sick leave balances?
That is correct.
Is there any, I don't know what, we had some guidelines in our company if you chose to utilize those hours. Of course, since it's medical, you have to get, you know, you're pretty generous with it, but if you don't have qualifiers for it, then you have to assume that the budget hit is going to be the total number of employees in your staff group that's going to take it, because if there's no qualifier around it other than, hey, I'm sick or I've got a child sick, I need to take this, and we have to assume the budget hit is going to be the number of people times 80 hours and their cost.
Well, in the county, there were some very specific processes and documentation that had to be provided before the employee was granted the ability to take that.
And we have implemented those same exact policies. We don't just hand out the leave. A person has to show the note from the school that the school was closed, the results of any testing, if a child was required to be testing. If it's the employee themselves, they're required to show documentation from the emergency room, from the COVID testing, and et cetera. So we as well are not just handing out the leave. Just because someone says that you know, they're sick or need to stay home or something.
Okay, so Shadar, do you understand what people are looking for when we discuss this again?
I guess one of the things I'm interested to know is how many total hours we're looking at. How many hours, and where's the money going to come from if we don't get reimbursed? So what's the worst case scenario impact on the organization? I think that there's already been a motion made and approved today. So if we look at it even next month, one of the things I'd ask you all to take into consideration is whether or not you're willing to approve it and make it retroactive back. So if you all decide to do it, we can reimburse the employees for the next 4 weeks, any time that they've taken off of that, give it back to them. But Shinar, that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for the total what if impact and where we're going to balance the budget off of that.
Anybody else? And Shinar, I would echo Aubrey's suggestion. If you get into a box, we can come back and talk about this with 3 days' notice.
Well, I mean, technically, I'm in the box. Like I said, fortunately, we do have the ability for folks to work at home, but I've talked to those folks who are trying to work at home because they don't have leave, and they should not be working because they are sick. They sound sick, but they are home, and so we're trying to accommodate that. But I would prefer them to have the ability to rest and take care of themselves versus trying to say leave or leave without pay because they've run out because there's no other option.
Well, I go back to James's comment. You can clarify by having a we can go back and retroactively fix it as well.
Right.
Just to be clear, you said that was because those employees do not have adequate leave balances.
That's
so they're
correct.
Out of like vacation time or PTO or whatever the label is.
Or it's very slim and they don't want to use it all just in case because we know that situation is ongoing. So they're trying to, with themselves being sick, trying to force themselves to work from home so as to not use the leave, so that in case what little they do have, if they have any, if it applies to a child or a spouse, then they'll have it available to take care of them. So they're trying to balance, you know, make do with the situation that they have. And I personally would prefer that they actually be resting and taking care of themselves, but you know, I also understand that they have to pay bills.
Understood. Well, if you could get that data to us pretty quickly, maybe we could just have a special session and convene really quick to render a decision so we don't postpone this until next month. That is an extended amount of time. But just making sure that we have what we need, or what's the plan B? Because it looks like, if I'm reading this correctly on page 21 of the agenda, that if we do implement that, the 80 hours, then that's about $285,000 out of the health benefits budget. And then what would that be?
Let me clarify that. That's a flip. The only 80 hours is only $74,298. The full CARES Act FFCRA is, that includes the 10 weeks for children. That's the $285,818.
So you're asking us, okay, I'm seeing what you're saying.
It was reversed, and I apologize, I missed that.
Okay, well, that's why I was hesitant. I'm looking at this number. If we're just talking about 80 hours for employee, maybe if you could get that data to us, if everybody else is in agreement, we could review real quick and render a decision in the following week or so. Does anybody else have an issue with that? No.
Final word. Okay, we'll move to the next item 10, Executive Director Report.
I really don't have anything for the report. We're plugging along.
Are your folks that are wanting to get vaccinated getting access?
I know we have had some get access. I was talking to some today. I had sent them the link to the Tarrant County site for those who wanted to sign up. Again, I've made it available to them. I've not asked them personally what they've done though.
I understand. Do we have anything for executive session?
Yes, sir, we do.
Okay. Then at this time, I will move us into executive session pursuant to Chapter 551, Texas Government Code 551-071-074 and Section 418.183F, Texas Disaster Act.
Let's
turn the recorder back on. Okay, we're coming back out of closed session into open meeting. We did not have any action items that came out of the closed session, so I will ask for public comments. Seeing none, I adjourn this meeting. Thank y'all for your time. Stay safe and be well.
Thank you. You too. Bye. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.